I'm Gab. He's Jules. Blue skies over West London after a tremendous weekend of football. We had the Derby della Madonnina, the Milan Derby, the biggest of them all for me, anyway. El Gran Derby in Sevilla. We had Barcelona, two goals in injury time.
Atletico as well.
Liverpool losing to West Ham and avenging Angelo. But let's start with the other derby, the one in Manchester, the one which I think in terms of the winner didn't surprise us. So I want to get that out of the way. No shame in losing to Manchester City because they're really good. So you look at the performance. The performance here, arguably, was just as bad as Liverpool when they shipped.
Maybe even worse,
Maybe even worse. So let's ask Mark Ogden, who's with us. Augie, was this worse? Why are they going backwards? I can live with them losing, but other than a couple of Cristiano shots, I think they generated almost nothing.
Well, they had more shots on their own goal than on Man City's goal, didn't they?
I love
they had
that stat.
An own goal, and that Victor Lindelof brought a save from David De Gea. So that's how bad it was. And you know, from the start of the game, United were too passive. They were scared. They looked like they had no belief they could beat City. Well, probably because they couldn't beat City. But you know, Pep Guardiola must have thought this was the easiest derby ever because he looked at the way that Man United lined up, had no obvious midfield. You know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is still in a job, and I'm told there's no plans to replace him, despite the fact they've been hammered by Liverpool, they've been hammered by Man City, albeit 2-0. They look so far off challenging for the top four, never mind the Premier League, but it still limps on, and it's bizarre, really, because we've seen a lot of managerial changes happening now across Europe. In the Premier League, in Spain, Barca have got rid of their coach, Tottenham, Aston Villa, Watford. But Man United continue to have faith in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but I'm not sure that faith is grounded in. One stat for me, which is really key, during the last almost 2 years, they've lost one away game in the Premier League. They've lost 10 at home in the same time. 10. So that shows you that they can't play at home, and home is where you get all your points and you build the bedrock of your success.
Jules, I'm going to throw it to you in a minute. I'm going to give Mark a little bit of homework in real time while you make your point, which is, can you come up with, I asked this question in my column, the last convincing 90-minute performance from Manchester United against a European-caliber team, a team that's playing in Europe or should be playing in Europe? Jules?
Yeah, it's the win at Spurs last season, the 3-1 win, where, especially in the second half.
I was going to ask Mark, but...
Sorry.
But that's okay.
I bailed Mark out. I agree with everything Augie said, and we were together at the game on Saturday, and it was very obvious from the beginning. And if you look at the graphic of the average positions, which I put on social media after the game as well, I mean, United, it's just... There's no structure to it tactically. There's no organization. You've got six players on the same line, and that's your average position for the whole game. It's dreadful. But the attitude was wrong from the beginning, from the players, I think from Solskjaer as well.
What should the attitude have been? Let's be constructive.
But look at the first goal, the Bailly on goal. Okay, Bailly is unfortunate. He tackles for the ball. I'm not even sure he needs to tackle the way he did. But Bruno Fernandes doesn't even close down João Cancelo. So I don't know if maybe Bruno thinks, because he's right-footed, he's going to take the ball onto his right foot and then cross it. So I've got time. I'm going to wait now. And then as soon as he put it on his right foot, I close him down then. But if that's what Bruno thought, that was completely stupid, because obviously he took it first time with his left foot. It's a good cross.
And we've seen him cross the ball with
but
his all other
along,
foot too.
All along, the guy on the ball for City, no pressure on him. There was no... They were not.
So they were trying. I'm trying to help Solskjaer here.
So they're
trying to defend positionally rather than press them and have them pass the ball.
Okay, but that's fair. We knew after the debacle against Liverpool, we knew they were not going to press anyway.
Right.
And had they tried to press, they would have been even more battered by City. So it's one thing not to press, but then at least in certain zones, you have to be more aggressive, close people down, win those duels, those challenges, which they never did. It was far too easy for, I mean, Bernardo Silva had a very good game, but had a very easy afternoon. Same with everybody else in that City team. And I think this is just not good enough.
Augie, I don't want to make this
that was the point I wanted to make quickly.
Right.
At least last season, physically, they were fitter than anyone else. This season, they don't even have that. So they're not even as fit as they used to be in terms of being aggressive, running, intensity. None of that. So I don't know what happened, but they're certainly not as fit as they were last season.
I don't think there's any argument with that. Augie, I don't want to just make this about United, because I think we need to praise City as well, because it's one thing to go and, you know, just stomp all over a poor opponent, which they did. It's another thing to do it so impressively, to do it with so much energy. I want to ask you just about that. Obviously, you mentioned Bernardo Silva, Cancelo. I thought De Bruyne, who's going through a really, really difficult patch, really hard, for Pep to read him to say, I'm going to play you in this, which is for us a big game, he could have easily said, you know what, take a little bit of time off. I'll see you after the international break. That was pretty huge.
Yeah, but maybe Pep thought, I'm going to play you in an easy game. Play against Man United at Old Trafford. It's fairly straightforward for a Man City player these days because they dominate possession.
But he had an easy game against Palace. He had an easy game against against Bruges. You know, I mean, it's...
I don't think that is as challenging for Kevin De Bruyne as playing at Chelsea as playing at Liverpool. And by the way, on both occasions, City dominated the game. Chelsea and Liverpool and at United. People aren't really giving City the credit I think they deserve this season. They haven't got a striker. People keep talking about, well, they should have signed Harry Kane. They'd have been better if they did. City are a really good team. They dominate everyone they play. And I think, as we're seeing that against United, it was embarrassing. Right. Well, 68% possession they had?
Augie, the only thing I take issue with you on is City do have a striker. His name is Ferran Torres. He happens to be injured right now. Enough of this recognized striker obsession because we'll never agree. I'm going to ask you guys, I know you guys are both really, really big figure skating and rhythmic gymnastics enthusiasts.
Yeah.
So in those sports, there's nobody keeps score. The judges hold up numbers. and you award based on that. Yeah. So what I would like to know from you, who is the best team in England right now? Don't give me, the table never lies, because the table lies all the time. Mm. Who plays the best football in England this season? Who is the best team in the Premier League this season?
Do you want me to go first? I mean, it's Manchester City. I think Liverpool have been impressive for most of the season. Not so much against West Ham this weekend, but that's one for another time. But I think City are just, they're just too good. Collectively,
and you have Liverpool second.
Yeah. But collectively, no one comes close to what City do with the ball. It's not always perfect, and they lose to PSG, they lose to Crystal Palace, lose to Spurs. Yeah. But they something else.
Yeah, I'll go further. I think there's City, and then there's Liverpool, and then there's a gap with towards whoever is third.
Yeah, Chelsea have played well at times this season. But they've got room for improvement.
Augie?
I think Liverpool are the most exciting teams to watch, but the best team for me are Man City. I just think they've dominated at Liverpool, they've dominated at Chelsea. That when they're in the mood, or even when they're not, they can just control games, you know, at the pace they want to play it. But I do think when Liverpool are at the best, they are more excited and more capable of scoring goals. But I'd take City to win me a game than Liverpool at the moment. I think City have got everything apart from a striker, despite your conviction of Torres.
All right, so let's cast this out slightly more broadly, because if City are the best team in England, right, which you guys seem to be saying, most people would say that Bayern are the best team in Europe right now.
Mm-hmm.
What is the gap between City and Bayern?
No gap.
You put them on the same level?
Exactly same level.
I think the gap is Lewandowski.
Automatic.
No, but seriously, I think when it comes down to that extra bit of detail. Robert Lewandowski ahead of Ferran Torres every day.
Okay, so then I tell you, bring Ruben Diaz to Bayern Munich, and that makes Bayern Munich stronger. So in that case, we can always go back and forth. You know, but of course, Lewandowski would improve City, but Ruben Diaz would improve Bayern Munich, who this season, I think defensively, as strong as City, for example.
Yeah, but I think if you play these two teams against each other this week and say, right, 11v11, who wins? I think Bayern win because they've got Lewandowski. I think that's the difference.
I disagree.
It's a fascinating discussion. I think one that we're going to pick up further on. I just want to say this. I think we can all agree that City are a deeper team than and have more options than Bayern do, certainly in terms of, you know, number 13 through 18. But I also think that one of the big differences as well is that Bayern, if you were to go through player for player, if we do that, you know, combined 11, which we're not going to do now, and viewers, you can all do this at home if you like, I think it might actually lean City's way, or it would be very, very close. So if they're a better collective, if they have a more experienced manager, if they have a deeper bench, I guess what I'm driving at is City, again, have to be favorites for the Champions League, even though I might have Bayern ahead of them right now. Because of Lewandowski, because he's a recognized striker. No, I'm just kidding. But that's what I find fascinating in this. Nagelsmann has just arrived. Yeah, he's only had so much time to work. He doesn't have the experience that Pep does. He has a much weaker bench. But in that 1-11, you know, he can still, I guess it's my way of praising, of praising Nagelsmann. All right. We've been nice so far. We've said nice things about City, about Bayern, about Liverpool. Let's turn to United and let me put this query to you, which I just genuinely do not understand, right? So he switches to three at the back, or more aptly, five at the back. And the idea to me is, all right, he's out of Cristiano. He's worked out what we could have told him, that Cristiano is a striker on his own up front, or Cristiano on the wing, are not good solutions. Not because Cristiano's back. Cristiano will always get you goals. It's a cliche. I think they've scored 20 goals since he's arrived. He scored 9 of them, right? And he scored important goals and big goals.
Yeah.
But the question isn't about Cristiano getting his goal. The question is, what helps the team as a whole? So he figures the two up front does it. Okay, fine, fair enough. But what strikes me is, what makes him think that this is a better solution going forward? Because, yes, they go and they pace Spurs, who haven't had a shot on goal, I think, since the 1950s, or shot on target, rather. But then against Atalanta, when with the three at the back, they're getting killed, right? And then they change it with Varane. And then he goes into this game with five at the back as well. What makes him think that this is a better solution?
Well, you've got more defenders, so you should be more solid. I think this is the idea.
Put Phil Jones. You have even more defenders
there. He played the back five before in the derby against City in previous seasons, and at times it worked. Because I still
think... When there were different players up front.
Yeah, but I still think that this helps you defensively in the half spaces, in the way the City fullbacks and the Atalanta wingbacks go forward. So I don't think it was a stupid... I don't think it was... Especially on the back of considering five against Liverpool. I think you go into a bit of a... Okay, let's be a bit more cautious. Let's give them less space than they have to attack, than they had to attack for Liverpool, for example. So I don't think it was too bad. Again, back five, back four. But if the attitude is wrong around the game, if you don't close people down, if you're not aggressive enough, you can play with a back eight. That's not going to change anything either. So I think tactically, because they were not prepared well enough for this game, because the players were not up for it, because I don't even think Solskjaer was up for it, I think the tactics goes out the window. It was the wrong tactic anyway. And going to a back four at half time didn't make much sense either. Because that didn't make them try harder either. But I think if you can't get the attitude right, the tactics are not going to save you anyway.
I just think we're giving Solskjaer too much credit here. I think he's making up as he goes along. I just don't think he knows tactically how to outsmart a better coach. I think we've seen that over the time. He's been there for 3 years now. He's not a guy that will devise a tactical plan. Now, I don't know if you saw this, but Michael Owen gave a really, really good assessment of Solskjaer's tactical shift at the weekend. He says that when you go for five or three at the back, it's just a system designed to hide the weak, to protect the weak. You're basically, if you've got a system that is working, but you're having to make your defence stronger, you're kind of covering for the weakness in your squad by adding more defenders to overcome the weaknesses of your defensive players. Also, the defenders aren't good enough. Wan-Bissaka, Lindelof, Maguire, Shaw, they've all been awful this season. And he's actually packing his team with more defenders who are playing badly. He doesn't have the tactical nous or the tactical intelligence to compete with even average tactical coaches in the Premier League. We've seen it time and time again. He just lives off momentum rather than tactical nous.
And I think the best thing is Guardiola and his staff sees the team, sees the lineup, and then they say, okay, we're going to play a left footer on the left wing and a right footer on the right wing instead of, for example, playing Mahrez right and Grealish on the left, let's say, to take an example. And they're going to stay really, really, really wide, and we're going to use that width because that means that... Instead of coming inside, which would be easier to defend for a Bailly or for Maguire,
of course,
Shaw,
they
stay wide, which means that often with the fullbacks bombing forward, especially Cancelo, that's going to mess them up. And that, all the first half, when City were attacking towards the Stratford end, and so Foden was on my side, and Pep kept saying to him, Phil, stay wide, stay on the touchline, stay on the touchline, stay on the whole time.
You're pulling the wing back wide and you're creating a natural channel for the fullback to run into.
Which meant that Wan-Bissaka had to go on Cancelo, which was not where he should be because he was far too high on the pitch. And then Foden, Bailly had to come out on Foden. And that was the hole that they used during the first half, for example.
But this is such basic stuff. And at first I thought, is it the players who are unaccustomed to back three? I mean, Maguire played a back three before coming to United, so he should be familiar with it, right?
Yeah, but you still have to work on it, Gab.
This is what I don't understand. What you said, Augie, about Solskjaer's tactical nous, It's not, well, we've seen it all the time. Solskjaer has a big staff around him. He talks to loads of people. Are you going to tell me that, like, Mike Phelan, who's been in the game, and then 30 years, I don't expect him to outsmart Pep Guardiola, right? That's setting the bar really, really high.
Yeah.
I just expect him to play something rational that makes sense. So we talked about the mental attitude. They weren't up for it. Okay, fine. Maybe that's on Solskjaer. But if Solskjaer can't handle the tactical side of the game, if Solskjaer's handling the mental side and he can't handle the tactical side, he has other people there.
But
right?
No, they can't do it either, because you've got Mike Phelan, who's not a coach. Mike Phelan is basically a guy.
What is he? What does he do? Was he just Fergie's mate?
He carries the Ferguson torch in his desk drawer. I don't know what he does. I think, and then you've got McKenna, Carrick, too young in the first jobs, haven't got that experience, that tactical nous to actually tell people this is what you're doing. Listen, here's the situation. For 2 years, I was told, we've all been told by Man United, we need a right winger. We need to protect Wan-Bissaka, strengthen right hand side. We need a right winger. They signed Sancho. What do they do? Play him on the left. He never plays on the right. So this is what I say about making it up as you go along. They put players into the squad, into the team, and say, right, let's see what we can do with this. And it doesn't make any sense. Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, Thomas Tuchel will have players. They'll know exactly what they do, what their job is. They won't sign them and suddenly play them out of position and do exactly the opposite they were asked them to do when they signed them.
It's absurd. It's not just them. It's Steve Bruce too. Like, this is what gets me. We're not talking about sophisticated high end stuff. We're talking about people making basic decisions, and that's what I really find frustrating. You know, that at this point, it's been 3 years now, right? Almost 3 years.
Yeah.
And it feels like, when I asked you before the question about the 90-minute performance, right? It feels to me like every time United do well, going back to last season when they finished second, yeah, you know, largely because Chelsea changed managers in midstream and everybody got injured for Liverpool, every time they won, it's because an individual did something. Yeah. Bruno Fernandes or Pogba, yeah, or De Gea makes a whole bunch of saves.
Cavani.
Or Cavani or Greenwood or whatever, or Rashford. Well, Rashford last year, not so much. But I struggle to understand this. And I tried to put myself in Solskjaer's position, and I'm going to try to give you a potential Solskjaer defense, okay? And you guys can tear it up if you think. Which is that I was working towards something. I was working towards Sancho, right? We knew he was coming. We'd locked him up a long time ago. I had a plan for all of this. And then what happens? The plan gets...
The Cristiano card, come on.
Rashford gets injured, and it takes him ages to come back, and he's a really important player for us. And then Cristiano drops in my lap. And then my plan goes out the window. Between Cristiano coming, Cristiano falling in here, and so my plan goes out the window. Pogba not signing his freaking contract, so I don't know if I can count on him either. These things coming together, and then all of a sudden, poor Solskjaer has to pivot.
Okay. Did you hear his post-match interview on Bein Sports?
I did not. I do not watch.
So
Bein
the question was,
why
did you change tactical formation at halftime? And his answer, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's answer was, we had to go back to what we are. What are you? You're nothing. Well, what is this? Okay, we have to go back to what we are, to what we do. You do nothing. You have nothing. You haven't built anything in 3 years. There's no identity to this team. What's the identity to this Manchester United team under Solskjaer? What's the identity?
Nothing. But this is what I'm driving
so
at.
So why is that line he gives me on, like, we have to go back to what we are? But no, you are nothing. Don't go back to anything.
The identity of Man United and the Solskjaer is chaotic wins and chaotic defeats. That is, it's chaos. That's
okay.
What it is.
And the whole DNA, he's got Man U DNA, he's got this.
Guys,
please.
The reason why players are now not even critically questioning the coach is because they want to be better. The likes of Bruno Fernandes, Ronaldo, Pogba, they want to be coached and guided by a coach who knows what he's doing. They look at the talent in that squad and think, this squad should be doing better. I want to be winning big things. I want to be winning games. And the coach is not able to do it. It's like having a really good teacher who's off for a week and you bring a supply teacher in who's not up to it, and he's not up to coaching those players.
Why are you suddenly in love with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
I'm not. I'm just saying, look, in my opinion, I think he's been here too long. I don't think he should be looking after this club, these resources, okay?
Yeah.
But I was trying to have a discussion. I'm trying to force myself, trying to understand him, because I don't understand anything he says, especially lately when he says stupid things like, criticism only makes me stronger. Okay, fine, then you'll be some combination of Hulk and Thor really soon, right? Maybe this is your... No, and I did think, was he working towards something? Was he working towards some kind of plan? And then these other things, again, it's not just Cristiano coming. I'm not suggesting he's going to blame Cristiano, right? But Cristiano comes in at the end of the summer when you've prepared all season for something else. So I'm throwing to Mark and asking Mark, is this a plausible theory?
No.
Okay, fine. But then I don't know what the deal is with this guy.
If there was a plan, I'll tell you what the deal is with the guy. In terms of the Glazers and Ed Woodward, having Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as a manager suits them because he doesn't challenge them, it doesn't cause a problem. Yes, the results are poor, but in terms of if he can get them in the Champions League, finish top four, they're happy with that. And that is the ultimate problem at United. They're not driven to win. They are driven to do the bare minimum. And Solskjaer has done the bare minimum. No trophies, no sign of a real trophy, but he's got them in the Champions League. And that, sadly, is all that matters for the owners at Man United. And right now, they know that there's no real need to change him because they're not too far away from the top four right now. And there's not anybody available. Antonio Conte is available, but they don't want a disruptor. They don't want somebody to challenge them.
What is this there's nobody available thing? This is what really...
No,
this is another thing that...
Who's not in a job.
No, but yeah. There's also people who are not in jobs who are going to be better than Solskjaer and give you a better shot.
True.
This is another thing that really bugs me about this situation. That, you know, they come out and they get these, let's lift the lid, right? Manchester United pay people who are media consultants to go and talk to the media. This is how, and it's not just United, this is how many clubs operate, right? But when you see things, they're called, in England they have this wonderful word, which only exists in England, called briefings, right? So in the US we would have said background, right? And they go in and they say, well, we don't, you know, Antonio Conte is not right for us, or, well, there's nobody available right now. And so that's why you see the same stories in every newspaper. Some of the papers copy each other. They all get the same information from the same person who's paid to go and try to influence the media. But you have to question that. Do you really believe there's nobody out there who's not already in a job, right?
I don't.
Are we really so unimaginative that all they can do is bring up Pochettino, Conte? There's other people out there, too. And I'm going to go back to something broader, right? And we've said this for years. In fact, I think, Augie, you even reported, like, 3 years ago that they were looking at considering signing a director of football. Obviously, there isn't one. Sorry, no disrespect to Darren Fletcher.
John Murtough. They sound John Murtough. Hey, John.
Do these people talk ever? Do they ever go and put their face out there? Why does it always have to be Solskjaer? Why can't, just from a comms perspective, one of these people come out and face the media and give an explanation of what they're trying to do? I don't expect Ed Woodward to do it because I know he calls enough people and he's on his way out now anyway. I don't expect the Glazers to do it because, well, for obvious reasons. Why? What kind of communication strategy is this?
Well, I mean, look, in the United's defense and
please,
other clubs don't. Listen, I mean, Michael Edwards doesn't speak to the media at Liverpool. These people tend to keep it under wraps. They don't give away their...
Leonardo speaks to the media every day, right?
In England.
I know, that's fine.
In England, that's not in your culture.
Okay, that's fine. But when you have an owner who never speaks, when you have a chief executive or whatever the hell Woodward's position is, who's leaving and basically doesn't speak at all anymore, when the only voice coming from Manchester United is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and you can see the guy's in difficulty, and he's saying more and more nonsense because of the pressure.
But we've had this kind of briefing and background in the past, and it's all based on the United DNA, a cultural reboot, basically turn the clock back to Fergie time. Man United are living in a situation at this time warp where, because they gave Sir Alex Ferguson 5 years in 1988, 89, 90 to win something, that it'll happen again. And I think they believe that because they've done it once, this is what they'll do, this is what Man United do. It's nonsense. It's 30 years ago, but United do things differently. David Moyes, Louis van Gaal, Jose Mourinho were all kept in a job longer than they really should have been, when it was obvious that the players had lost faith, the fans had lost faith, but the Glazers and Woodward kept limping on because they don't like making tough decisions.
Why is not Solskjaer's fault, or not Ole's fault, is that this squad has been built with a lot of money, you know, 90 for Maguire, 80 for Sancho, 55 for Wan-Bissaka.
I'll go further. It was a long time ago, 30 for Shaw when he was 18 years old. And back then, that was an enormous amount of money.
Why are they giving Juan Mata a one-year contract in the summer? He played about 10 games last season.
Because he's a nice guy and he's good in the dressing room.
They're keeping players on because it's cheaper to keep them than it is to replace them. Phil Jones, Eric Bailly got a three-year contract this summer. Solskjaer got a three-year deal, for God's sake. Three-year deal.
We can also go to, as much as he's my boy, to the Paul Pogba deal. And I mean, I think there's a point where they also have to look at how dysfunctional or underperforming this squad is for the money they paid for, and think, you know what, we also need to reflect a little bit on how to spend money and where we spend that money, because even it's not because they've got money that they can just, you know, spend it in that stupid way.
I'm going to leave you with this. Augie, you've been around the block. You've been covering United for a long time. Conventional wisdom has it that, oh, Fergie left and everything fell apart. But around the time that Fergie left, somebody else left the club who I think had a really important institutional role, who got involved in transfers, and that person is David Gill. Mm-hmm. Now, I just know he's very tall. I've met him a bunch of times. I have no idea how old he is. Maybe he's too old to come back. Maybe he doesn't want to come back. But surely the Glazers remember David Gill. Surely they look at David Gill and say, Ed Woodward isn't David Gill. Different skill sets. Maybe when we go forward, maybe we look for a figure like that rather than just promoting one of Ed Woodward's friends, which looks like that they're going to do, right?
I think the problem with that is, Gab, that you underestimating the power of ego in this. And I think that when Sir Alex Ferguson and David Gill ran the club, it was their club. And as soon as Sir Alex and David Gill left, it was the Glazers club, it was Ed Woodward's club. And that was when they wrestled full power. David Gill is aligned to Sir Alex Ferguson, so he's part of the old regime. And David Gill coming back is an embarrassment to Ed Woodward, an embarrassment to the Glazers. And David Gill is a very intelligent man. He would not go back in that situation and the mess that is there. I think we also have to say, the rot didn't sit in May 2013 when Fergie left. It set in 3 or 4 years prior to that, arguably when they saw Cristiano Ronaldo and signed Michael Owen, Antonio Valencia, Gabriel Obertan, when they started looking for so-called value in the market. And they took the foot off the ball then. They signed Ashley Young, Phil Jones, people like that. When Man City was signing Yaya Toure, David Silva, Sergio Aguero, that's when Man United's rot set in, when Sir Alex Ferguson, maybe implicitly, was helping the Glazers to, you know, pay the debt down and make in a difficult financial situation. That's when United should have been putting the foot to the pedal, and Sir Alex Ferguson let them easy off. And when David Moyes arrived, now David Moyes wasn't up to the job, the rot had already set in. And it's a 10-year period.
From Mark's lips to God's ears, because I think those are really important things. Yeah. Much as we've been critical of Solskjaer and obviously Woodward's, everybody's whipping boy, there were serious issues that perhaps were there when David Gill and Sir Alex were around. Augie, thanks so much. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough United. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
A wild and entertaining Derby della Madonnina.
Yes.
Oh, mia bella Madonnina. Finishes 1-1, if only. Jules, fair result?
I think it was in the end, Gab. What a game. This was incredible, especially the first half. End-to-end stuff, high intensity, loads of things, loads of drama happening. The penalty miss by Inter, Lautaro, them scoring, Milan scoring. The second half sort of calmed down a little bit. And then for the last 20 minutes, I think once Pioli's changes really had an impact on the game. Milan were the strongest. They could have won. I think a Milan win late in the game would have maybe been a little bit unfair for Inter. But I think towards the end, Milan looked the stronger team and add 10 minutes to the game, and I think they would have won it. But in the end, I felt 1-1 was a fair result.
I thought it was tremendous. I think one of the real things that Pioli showed is that on a day where obviously Theo Hernandez is suspended, Brahim Diaz had a very quiet game. You go out there, you have your game plan, it works to a point. You could be 2-1 down.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you sense the flow's against you, you go and you make the right decisions. Yeah. Because he has a lot of options on the bench. I'm not saying it's a bench filled with superstars, but he can change things many different ways. I think he made the right decisions. I think it got away from Inzaghi a little bit.
Yeah.
But what I also really liked about Inter is I'm all about controlled aggression, channel your rage. With Inter, we've seen them lose their heads many times.
Yeah,
and they didn't do it in this. I just thought it was a phenomenal evening of football.
Let's hope Barella is not badly injured.
Yeah.
And I still think Joaquin Correa could have come on earlier. But speaking of Çalhanoğlu, who scored that penalty, obviously, for Inter in the game, sometimes we see players not celebrating against their former club. In that case, Gab, he had no hesitation.
Look, I am Çalhanoğlu's worst critic. I'm one of his fiercest critics.
Yeah,
I think
he's
very
been
up and down. I thought he was poor at the end towards Milan. I think Milan were right in saying, okay, we think you're worth this much. What did the guy do? He said, no, I think I'm worth more. Inter offer him more. And he goes and he takes it. That doesn't make him a Judas. It doesn't make him Benedict Arnold. He moves to another club. And I loved the fact that he wins a penalty. That back and forth with Kessié, I think, could have gone either way.
Yeah.
I think in Italy now, like in the rest of Europe, we've gotten to the point that let's allow some physicality here. You know, let's not take the easy way out. Just call the foul on Çalhanoğlu, which is what might have happened 10 years ago. I personally like that. And he takes a penalty and he converts it. And then, yeah, he gives it this. Nothing wrong with just showing your fans' ears who've booed you. Nothing wrong with the moment.
Should he have taken the second penalty?
No,
who went back to Lautaro, who is the designated one.
Lautaro Martinez is the penalty taker, and he took a better penalty than Çalhanoğlu did. It's just that, you know, Tatarusano saved it. Wild stuff in Vigo, too, as Barcelona go 3-0 up by halftime and then are pegged back to 3-3 by a magnificent Iago Aspas winner in the 6th minute of injury time. Jules, I thought certain things only happen in Istanbul.
No, well, they happen in Vigo as well. The thing with this Celta team, if you haven't watched them, is that they will always attack, regardless of what the score is, who they play against, and it costs them a lot because they could probably be, I think, higher up on in the table if they had a bit more, a different approach to game at times. So you knew that even at 3-goal down, they would keep attacking, even if that meant losing 6-0 in the end. However, I didn't see that one coming. They were brilliant when Barca stopped playing, really, in that second half. I don't know if Barca subconsciously thought, let's just manage that game or what, but the first goal goes in, and then the second, and then you know they're in trouble, even if the third one comes really, really late.
I think, though, if you look at it, even it's not that they don't just attack, right? They press high.
Yeah,
and if you look at Barcelona's opportunities in the first half, the way those goals came, apart from Ansu Fati, obviously there was a deflection and a great goal, but a lot of it was Barcelona were just successfully playing through the press because they weren't. It was high risk, high reward. They weren't doing it well. In the second half, they did it better, and Barcelona had no answers.
They had no energy. Maybe having played in midweek, with Celta didn't have to do, maybe played a big role as well. The good news, though, Gab, for Barcelona is the cavalry is on its way. Confirmation that Xavi is the new manager that was made official during the weekend. Is he in Barcelona getting ready?
Yeah, reports from Qatar saying that it's costing $5 million to release him from his contract.
Surely not.
$5 million? I mean, talk about.
Plus the 12 they have to pay the Dutch guy.
I mean, whatever. If he makes you better, nobody's going to care. There's even somebody making a big point out of the fact that, well, Xavi's paying this money himself. No, he's not. I can pretty much assure you he's not reaching into his pocket and pulling out $5 million.
Just writing the check.
Yeah, but I think this shows the work, the size of the task at hand ahead of him.
Yeah.
Liverpool lose 3-1 to West Ham, and Jurgen Klopp is grumpy. Jules, should he be more annoyed at Alisson having a rough day, perhaps responsible in all 3 goals, or at the referee and VAR comedy duo of Craig Pawson and Stuart Atwell for not sending off Aaron Kressel for that nasty challenge on Jordan Henderson and for allowing the first goal to stand?
As a continental myself, I think the first goal should have been disallowed. I think Ogbonna, with his arms in the air, sort of pushes Alisson.
No. Ogbonna's in front of him. He jumps. He jumps up. He needs to use his. It's Alisson who runs into him. No. Don't mess with the angel of
the angel's arm
of West Ham.
The angel's arm, right? It's not. He's just jumping.
He has wings. He has wings.
Certainly, the Cresswell, we agree that it's a red card, yeah?
Yeah,
I don't even know how they don't give that.
I don't even get him to look at it. I don't know.
I don't understand. But as we've been saying, preparing for the show, this has been a terrible weekend once again for English referees.
It's awful.
But still doesn't excuse that Liverpool were not on the A game at all. not really good, even if they had chances, even if they scored two good goals.
I said 3-1. It was 3-2, of course.
3-2, yeah, because of the late Divo Origi.
How about that? Yeah, really bit of tuckers nice. There.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit West Ham, Gab, then, after the last question. They won the World Cup in 1966, obviously, as everybody knows. Not much more than that as a club. And now they join second in the table, third on goal difference alongside Manchester City. Should we give them some love and your friend David Moyes?
I think so. First of all, I don't believe in goal difference, as you know. It's a philosophical thing. True. So they're second in the table.
Not really, but yeah.
Look, this is a team that they finished sixth last year. Six. So it's not like West Ham are coming out of nothing. You know, he's been... I'm very happy for him because he's a genuinely good person.
Yeah, he
makes mistakes. He's more than most. He learns from his mistakes. He tends not to make the same mistakes over and over again. They've added to the team. He's getting the best out of Antonio. Johnson's come in. Jared Bowen, I think, is a player and a half. Fornals, another one. Declan Rice is the emotional leader here. And, of course, they have the angel. That is Angelo Ogbonna. You know, just touch his cheek before you...
You know, they've beaten City, United, Spurs, and Liverpool now. In all competitions, if you count the League Cup, but I still count the season. It's pretty good.
It's very real. Very real. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. Real Madrid stay second, beating Rayo Vallecano 2-1. Jules, it was all comfortable
it
until
was.
El Tigre, Radamel Falcao, comes
it.
On.
I love it. So, really good first half from Real Madrid, 2-0 up, no problem. But this Rayo Vallecano side is a good team. And they play, and especially when Falcao came on this time.
He was injured, too.
So, that's the thing. I think if he comes on 65th minute, I think, or something like that, a bit later, scores 5 minutes later to make it 2-1.
And
the pressure is building, and then
he
comes off. And then they missed two chances right at the end to make it 2-2. I think if Falcao stays on the pitch, they go and draw that game. A late Juan Cuadrado goal gives Juventus a 1-0 win over Fiorentina, Gab. They will take the result, of course, but they didn't play well. Didn't have a shot on target even until Fiorentina went down to 10 men.
Yeah, Fiorentina always a grudge game between the two. They were positive. Matthijs de Ligt was outstanding at the back on Dusan Vlahovic. Chiesa had his moments in the second half. But guys, you have to create chances and shoot on goal. You know, in the midfield, McKennie and Locatelli, they did okay. It's just not working. And what I don't understand is they can be so good against Zenit. In the Champions League. And really show drive and intensity, whatever. And then they come up, they drop this turd at home against Fiorentina.
Crazy. I don't understand.
Allegri, come on, man. Let's sort it out.
Yeah.
Top of the table, Chelsea are held to a home draw by Burnley 1-1. Jules, 2 points drop for TT.
Massively. I mean, Tuchel said it himself, best way we can play this game another 99 times and we will win all of them. But this time, Burnley had pretty much one chance and scored that goal right at the end to make it 1-1 when Chelsea had plenty of chances. So many of them. Nick Pope was good in goal for Burnley. And it's a shame. Just not many of those for Chelsea if they want to win the title.
No reason to worry.
Yeah. Bayern inflict the first defeat of the season to Freiburg, who had crept up to third place in the table somehow. Gab, Christian Streich rattled them for a while, though.
Yeah, they were rattled. I mean, they were still 1-0 up. Look, Streich, big pressing team, intense, blah, blah, blah. And it's pretty feast or famine, right, when you go and you play that way. But they came through nicely. Lewandowski scoring again. I think he might be on pace for something like 60 goals in all competitions, just unreal. And then, obviously, Freiburg pulled one back in garbage time. But still, I think, they could have cycled through different levels if they needed to.
Paris Saint-Germain go 3-0 up against Bordeaux as Neymar and Mbappe combine for 3 goals and 2 assists before conceding 2 late goals.
Okay.
But that's nothing to worry about, yeah?
You know what? They didn't start well, as they do usually, but then had a really good spell of, let's say, an hour, more or less, where they played well, much better in the build-up play, the passing, the movement, all of that. Then they took the eye off the ball a little bit towards the end. Pochettino's substitutions were dreadful. I didn't really get it at all. But you won, you move on. But at least there was a bit of...
Still looks like moments from individuals to me.
No. They played better collectively. Lionel Messi didn't play in that game against Bordeaux, but somehow still flew over to Argentina to play with the national team, him and Paredes as well, who are injured for PSG. Gab, what do you make of this?
I read somewhere that he had worked it out in his contract that he could always fly back even if he's injured. So like, if it's in his contract, that's fine. If you know that. You're Messi. If your employer agrees with it.
I know, but...
You know,
is it wise to travel like 8,000 miles or something to go when you're not
fit? I'm sorry, that's the deal. If you're Messi, you sign a contract.
They qualified already, Argentina. It's not like if there was a risk that they would not make the World Cup.
He wants a little bit of asado, a little bit of cumbia. Come on, nothing wrong with that.
Fair enough.
Injury-riddled Borussia Dortmund fall against Jesse Marsh's Leipzig, 2-1. Jules, Christopher Nkunku was tremendous.
Yeah.
Daniel Malin was not.
I knew it.
We've been proven right once again.
I knew it. And you know what? In fairness to you, I would have said to you, even if that was not in the quickies that you wrote, I would have said, you were right. I was wrong. Certainly so
about
far.
Malin.
I thought Daniel Malin would do better than what he's done. He was terrible in that game. Really bad. And I thought Leipzig were good for all the criticism that we've given them so far this season, and Jesse Marsh and the unbalanced team, and the fact that at times they could not control it. They were really good in that game.
And we're still giving Rosa a pass because everybody's injured. Yeah,
come on. Okay. I mean, this is his C team. First Premier League game of the Antonio Conte era at Tottenham, and they travelled to Everton, Gab, and he finished 0-0. And once again, no shot on target.
But Lo Celso did hit the post.
Yeah.
But again, it's an individual effort from outside the box, so it doesn't really count. I think this just kind of shows you this begins the way the Nuno era ended. Now, you know, if Conte were here, he'd say, we need to work. Arsenal have now won 8 of their last 10 games and are up to 5th in the table. Jules, has Mikel Arteta found the magic formula, or is Claudio Ranieri right to be furious after the Danny Rose and Ismaïla Sarr incidents that led to the only goal?
Well, so I think Arteta and Arsenal have something good going on. Going forward, that 4-4-2 so far is working. There will be a bigger test ahead, especially in 2 weeks' time against Liverpool. Of course, there will be. But I think in terms of momentum and confidence, this is all good.
You know what? He believes in it so much that with Partey and Xhaka out, he puts Maitland-Niles in central midfield. That tells you he believes in the system.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was really good, and it's good for them, and they're climbing up in the table. And we can discuss that goal that they scored. But, okay, you look at me, Danny Rose is saying to Emmanuel Dennis, stay down, because he put the ball...
I think it was Tufan, actually, but yeah.
Tufan.
No,
and he keeps saying, stay down. Well don't put the ball out.
Don't focus on the stay down. He puts the ball out of play. First of all, he's an idiot for putting the ball out of play in that area. Just boot it up the pitch and put it out of play there, which is what normal people do. But then again, it's Danny Rose we're talking about, right? I still think it's obvious why he put the ball out of play. Just give the ball back. This is a pretty basic thing. I know some teams say we don't do it, but it is a convention.
But Tufan is up. By the time that the throw-in is taken, Tufan is up. He's playing.
I know, but you don't deserve to get the ball there. Your opposition gives you the ball in that position.
He put the ball out when his player was not injured. What?
He was
so
down
you give
when
it back
he put the ball out.
You give
anyway,
it back to the opposition.
Doesn't change the fact you're trying to deceive here, because Ismaïla Sarr, agree.
Ismaïla Sarr.
Yeah, we completely agree that. You can't tell me that was a foul. You have a VAR whose only job is to look at these situations. That goal shouldn't have stood. Doesn't change the fact Arsenal deserve to win.
Deserves to win, yeah, that's true. Gab, another wild comeback in a weekend of wild comebacks, to be fair. Atletico Madrid were 3-1 up away at Valencia, and in injury time conceded 2 goals to draw 3-3. Pretty incredible.
Yes, 2 goals from substitute adult film star Hugo Duro.
Poor guy if he's listening. I mean,
why? It's a compliment. It's a cool name,
I
right?
I don't know. It's a cool name. It's a really cool name.
Would you prefer it if your name was like Hugo Weak?
No, of course not. But like, come on.
Or Hugo Inept or Ole Gunnar
Solskjaer.
Oh, my
God. This is enough. Yeah.
All right. So he comes on, scores 2 great goals. Miss Dyer goes nuts or whatever.
Mental.
And obviously... If you're an Atletico fan, we did this on the show last night, you know, I thought, well, I said Atletico played well. And, you know, Sabaleta knows, obviously, Diego Simeone much more. He said, no, Diego Simeone will be angry, blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, obviously you're angry because those are two big points dropped and because people will come out with a whole thing about, ooh, do are Atletico not as, are they soft and have they gone soft, blah, 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 Atletico Cholismo vote. I think those debates belong to the past. This is a different Atletico team now. And you can always concede two goals, especially the first of the two goals I thought was phenomenal from Duro. There's nothing you can really do there, right? And your mind's going to go to that. Focus on the fact that after getting your rear end handed to you by Liverpool in midweek, you can go away, take on a Bordalas team and Mestalla.
Not very good.
No, but it's fine. It's still Bordalas. It's still physical and kicking and fouling or whatever. And you can go and you can actually play really, really well without Marcos Llorente, without Thomas Lemar. Suarez, I thought his goal was great. It was even their best goal in the game because obviously you had the Griezmann goal.
Oh, amazing, Griezmann.
It was a good performance. It was a tough-minded performance. And yeah, in the end, he scored two goals.
But he messed up his substitutions at the end.
It's always you with the substitution.
But it's true. And he even said himself, he said, it's my fault. I take responsibility. We lost the 2 points because he messed that up. I don't
think he takes responsibility.
I know, but I don't think he had to change the way he did, for sure.
Sevilla win El Gran Derby, beating Betis 2-0. Jules, was this deserved, or did Guido Rodriguez's first half sending off change the game?
So the red card changes everything, because in the first half before that, that's right, the end of the first half, it was pretty even. I think Sevilla had more of the
ball.
Sevilla
had more chances.
Yeah, in the first half, they didn't have that.
Rafa Mir could finish a little
bit. I know, but they had more of the ball, but didn't have that many chances in the first half either. Second half was a completely different story, 11-10. They had, I think, 80% of the ball. Big chances. They should have scored more than two, to be fair. I don't know. That red card, as deserved as it is, in those games, the biggest games, just spoils it a little bit. I would have liked to see the whole game at 11-11.
I'm happy.
Great atmosphere.
I'm happy because they stay right up there, alongside Real Madrid. And of course.
Yeah. Napoli are held to a 1-1 draw by Verona as Giovanni Simeone scores again. Gab, should Luciano Spalletti be full of regret? And what's the story with the Maradona special shirt that they're going to produce?
But they do this every year. They make a Maradona shirt.
Like, don't they have like already 25 kids? And then this one, don't they need to ask the Maradona family or something to put his face on the shirt?
Come on, you're talking about the relationship. It's Napoli Maradona, it's family,
still,
right?
Still.
Come on, man.
What are we doing it now? Do it last year after he passed?
I genuinely have no idea. But more importantly, about the game here, I thought they played well. I think Verona are a great side. I don't think it's a coincidence. Verona this season have taken points off of Roma. In fact, they've beaten Roma. They've beaten Lazio. They beat Juventus as well. This is a really, really, really good team.
Yeah.
And, you know, Napoli still hit the woodwork with Osimhen. Would have been a great goal. Yeah. You can live with a draw. You know, they're top of the league in Serie A.
You're not going to win everything anyway. Sometimes.
They're top of the league in the Europa League. They had a game on Thursday night. Obviously, I think took a lot out of them. Yeah, big away win. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, no worries either.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
5 defeats in a row cost Dean Smith, not the Dean Smith who coached the North Carolina Tar Heels, the one who coaches Aston Villa.
Yeah.
It cost him his job. Is this a bit harsh? And what do you make of the rumored candidates to replace him? We've had Steven Gerrard, Ralf Hasenhüttl.
I thought it was a bit harsh, and I know it's not just this season, it's also on the back of the second half of last season.
That's what Christian Perslow said.
Yeah, I still think that it's not like his team. I know they lost to Southampton, I know they lost to Arsenal, that first half was dreadful, I was there, but it's not like the team was not responding to him completely. It's not like if they were playing really, really badly.
I saw them at Chelsea. They looked really good.
Yeah, exactly. They won at Old Trafford. And Solskjaer is still in charge and Dean Smith is gone. So, but I guess that's the reality. After the money you spend in the summer, you don't want to be falling 15, 16 already in the season. I can understand that. Big call now on who replaces him, because you can't get this one wrong. Gerrard, I'm all for it, of course. Hasan Hüttl, this is a bigger job than Southampton because this is a better squad than Southampton. Yeah. But I don't know. You have to be really smart on who you go and get next now.
I really like Ralf Hasan Hüttl. I think what he's doing with all the players gone or whatever, I think he'd be a tremendous choice. I don't like going for managers who are in jobs mid-season.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's often messy. It's difficult to do. It often takes time unless there's something we don't know about. I'm not sure Gerrard would walk away now anyway. I mean, I think it would be a tough sell for him. Obviously, Hasan Hüttl, but does Hasan Hüttl want to be a Judas like this? He has got a job. He's got a team he's looking after. Exactly. It's messy. It's ugly.
It's not easy for them.
If you go for an interim coach, you know, you're also kind of putting yourself in that box where you're in danger of going down.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, so not easy at all. One win in his last seven across all competitions for Jose Mourinho, Gab. He was grumpy again after that defeat against Venezia and blamed the referee, of course. Is it a case of nothing changes?
Oh, come on. I purposely put it here in French in the script.
That doesn't mean anything. Plus ça change.
The more things change.
Yeah.
But it might not work in French, but whatever. Okay, all right. I mean, the more the things change, the more it stays the same.
Yeah.
Let's talk Mourinho. Emphatically, no. Okay? So there's good things and there's bad things about the Roma team, good things and bad things he's done. The first thing to remember...
What are the good things?
No. The first key thing to remember is this is not... If Mourinho's coming up short, and I think he might be the first to say he is, and he might also say it's not his fault... It's got nothing to do with what happened at Spurs, what happened at United. This is a different Mourinho. This is a Mourinho where the team, it's remarkable. The team goes out and tries to attack and commits people forward. And he makes courageous decisions.
So it's a different Mourinho in the way they play. That's what you mean?
Yes. It's weird. For the first time in my life, I look at a Mourinho team and I say, this team doesn't have balance. Now, his really bad teams that were uber defensive and negative and whatever, they had balance. His good teams obviously had balance, right? This team... does not.
Okay.
He should not be blaming the referee because when he watches it again, he can blame the referee in other games, but not this one. They conceded stupid goals. Venezia hit the woodwork twice. Yeah. Venezia were in the relegation zone.
I mean, the third goal is a joke defensively. I mean,
yeah, it makes your head want to explode. So it is a different Mourinho. It is one win in seven. I think the screws are turning a little bit in the sense that what happens, this is Rome. He's got the support of the club. Once he loses the support of the fans, then it becomes really, really difficult. Yeah. I think he still has that because, and this is a credit to him, he has energized them and they like to see the attacking thing, but also, and they've also played a really tough schedule so far, but also shades of last year when they were leaking goals, when they couldn't beat the big teams. Here now they're losing to a smaller team. Well,
it's never his fault. So Bodo Glimt, you lose 6-1 over there. It's because of my substitution, like my bad players, my second string team, they're bad. Then, you know, Bodo Glimt at home, you draw, he said, it's the referee, we should have had two penalties. Now it's the referee again. I mean, like, come on.
Did you see the video of him with Jan?
Yeah, Jan, yeah.
He said, what do you think?
You tell me. Oh, God.
Now, it's been a while since we discussed your pal, Peter Boss. His Lyon side had a rough day away to Rennes.
Poor man. They lost 4-1. They should have lost 8. They were that bad. Rennes were fantastic, especially in the first half when they only scored one goal, but should have had many, many more. And he changed the formation, doing what Peter Bosch does, and that really backfired badly.
He played the 4-2 Bosch formation?
Pretty much. And then at the end, they've got a penalty. Houssem Mawar, who's the designated guy, go and take it, but Paqueta said, no, I want it. Dubois is too weak.
Let's be clear, you're 4-0 down.
Yeah.
And you're arguing over who takes a freaking penalty.
Because Paqueta wants the stats, so he didn't want, I think he just wanted to score a penalty, a goal. And then Mawar looks at Dubois, talking about, quickly about captains, right? Dubois is the captain.
Leo
is nothing like a captain, right? He doesn't have the personality, the charisma. No offense, Leo, but you know it's true. So Awar says, hey, sort this guy out because I'm the penalty taker here in this team. And Dubois basically pretends that he can't see what's happening. So Paqueta takes it, scores it, but Awar is not happy. It's embarrassing for the image of your club. And on the back of having your bum wiped by this Rennes team, managed by your former coach, by the way, who you sacked calling him Pep Genesio because he, you know, he thought he was a French Guardiola. It was just an incredible game, an incredible night. Not if you're Peter Bosz and Olympic.
Can you explain something to me about OL? For years, obviously, many years ago when they spent money, they won, was it seven in a row or eight, whatever it was, eight in a row. And we said, oh, look, he's so smart. He's so innovative. The owner, is he getting a little bit old now?
Yeah, that, like, he is.
Time passes even for him. And yeah, so he's saying, Peter Bosz, this is good.
He wanted to give Juninho a bit more freedom to run the club. Not so good with Silvinho. Not so good with Garcia. Not sure about Bosz still.
But you know
who's going to come next to run this club? Tony Parker.
Tony Parker, the basketball player,
who's already a shareholder and who is clearly, they're working with him to be the heir to Jean-Michel Aulas.
We should invite him on our show.
We should invite him on our show. I'll drop him a text for sure. After 5 years as Ukraine boss, Andrei Shevchenko will get his first test of club football. Gab is the new boss of Genoa.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how this works out. Genoa have new owners, a group called, very imaginative called, was it, I think, 777 Capital?
Yeah.
I mean, all right, I suppose that's better than being called 666 Capital, because that would be downright satanic. But they did a whole search. They did this properly. They appointed a company called Rotexo to go and see who's the right. These are the same people who did the search, I think, for Mourinho at Roma. So, but I had the opportunity to spend some time with Shevchenko in Switzerland in September, and he's up for it. He's been really wanting to go back. I think on balance, you know, with Ukraine, I think he did a good job. This is a very different challenge. He's had a lot of different influences coaching-wise. You know, when you look at the Milan alums,
I know
how they've done in football.
A bit like Barca.
It's a bit of a mixed bag, right? Yeah, you got some up, some down. But I'm curious to see what he can do, and hopefully they'll have, there's no way they could have worse ownership than what they had before. So good luck to him.
First game for him, Mourinho and Roma. Here
how about
you go.
We've had wild comebacks all over Europe this weekend. Yeah. So, of course, Ligue 1 wasn't going to miss out.
Nope.
Jules, tell me about Saint-Étienne, who were second bottom coming into this game.
Had not won a game, Gab. Had not won a game. They play at home against Clermont. No fans.
No, not just Clermont. Clermont Foot.
No fans behind closed doors because of all the troubles that the fans have done in recent weeks, because they're not happy. They protested before the game, and they're 2-0 down with 15 minutes to go. Saint-Étienne, you can just imagine. And then they score three goals. In 15 minutes.
Two of them in injury time,
92nd, 94th. Saïdou Sarr, one of the young Paris born and bred, of course, product from the academy, scoring a huge goal for Claude Puel for this team. Incredible scenario, really, to this game where they did nothing for 75 minutes, pretty much, and then scored those three, especially the last two in the last 2 minutes of the game on two set pieces, two corners.
Is this kind of like a Leicester Nigel Pearson type turning point where they end up, they go on a run now, they stay up, and then next season they
win the league? No, not this time. Newcastle have their new manager, confirming Eddie Howe, who watched their 1-1 draw at Brighton from the stands. Now it's all about the director of football, and they've been linked with Ajax Mark Overmars and former Chelsea and Monaco sporting director Michael Emenalo as well. Gab, how important is this? And should not have done the other around, first the sporting director and then the coach?
We've said it before, they should get the sporting director first. Now, if they wanted to get Mark Overmars, again, if you go for somebody who's in a job, it's going to be complicated, it's going to be messy.
Of course.
Like, we can all see all the great young players that Ajax has. What I would do before appointing a director of football from Ajax is I would go forensically and say, hey, what exactly have you done? Because you have a tremendous academy that produces kids, and if the kids come in at 14, 15, 16, it's not because Mark Overmars trained them. Did you appoint the guy who trains them? Does it make them better? What signings have you done? Obviously, they've had some good ones, Anthony, whatever else.
Yeah. Sebastian Haller,
an obvious one, right? Okay, what part were you in there? Were you good at, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't.
Yeah.
Maybe what works at Ajax, where you're the dominant team financially and in terms of infrastructure
in the league,
might not work at Newcastle, where there's a different dynamic. All these things, but instead, no, let's just go for the big name, whatever. Emenalo, I'm a big fan.
Me
I have the opportunity
too.
To spend some time with him. I don't know about, you still need somebody to negotiate the deals, because he generally is more identifying the talent, bringing the players.
Side,
So I think it would have been important. I don't know. I think they need to have somebody in place pretty quickly. And I think that's going to be a crucial dynamic, because there's one thing that we know about Eddie Howe at Bournemouth anyway. He's the kind of guy who's used to being like, or maybe I'm depicting him correctly, he's kind of like the mini boss, right? Of,
yeah,
he's the big boss of Bournemouth, right? Like, oh, director, like you know,
he
I'm
worked
the boss.
Really well with our friend Richard Hughes, who's the sporting director at Bournemouth, but they've been friends for a long time. That's why I'm a bit worried here. And I don't know how much Eddie Howe will be involved in choosing the sporting director, because
he shouldn't
I
be
think,
involved at all.
Well, no, but one, now that you've appointed him, he has to be involved a bit, because if the two are not on the same page, it's going to clash pretty quickly.
Right, but this is the whole issue. Like, the sporting director is a long-term appointment. The manager, you hope, is a long-term appointment, but
yeah, but
might
they
not
still
be.
Have to work well together.
Of course, but no, you shouldn't make Eddie Howe part of the thing. I don't know. Well, we'll see. And the other thing, which I say this all the time, is we assume that because people were one way and it worked very well for them for a long time, and it worked very well for Eddie Howe at Bournemouth, they're going to be that way forever. Maybe they're not. No. Eddie Howe left Bournemouth. He's had time to think. What could I have done better? What could I have done differently? I don't know him well. I don't know how introspective he is. Maybe he's that. Maybe he's like, I'm at a different club in a different dimension now. And maybe I need to work differently. Who knows?
Yeah.
Norwich are dead last, but they did win their first game of the season away to Brentford on Saturday, 2-1. I watched Daniel Farke afterwards saying about, this could be a catalyst in our season, blah, blah, blah. The lads are working hard. We're going to use this.
Oh, I love him.
And then a few hours later, they sack him. Jules, I think this is, okay, first of all, I think this is really weird. In fact, it's downright idiotic. Well, you can't wait for the next day to fire him, at least.
I know.
I mean, I'm not saying results should determine whatever, and I didn't watch the full 90 minutes of the game because there's other games going on, and I'm not a Brentford obsessive. So, I'll assume it's possible that Brentford battered them and they were lucky to win. I don't know.
Yeah.
And maybe you should have sacked Farke anyway. But to do it in the play, the guy just won. Why you wheel him out, making
it's
him look like an idiot?
I think. Yeah.
What?
It's humiliating, I think. And I think certainly they would have known what he said on television. Certainly about all that positive message, let's build on this, and then...
Don't make him look stupid. Why?
Well, I agree with you completely.
It's just bad comms. And
wait for the
Sunday. And then those are good owners, by the way. We always say, like Delia Smith
and
her husband.
Good
owners, they care.
I think this time they missed the trick.
Good owners can make
exactly
bad decisions, which they did.
Now,
in the way be good.
Like we said for Villa, go and get the next one and don't get it wrong. I mean... They're not out completely. They're not relegated. They can still, they've got maybe the weakest squad of the Premier League, of course.
Yeah.
But there's still maybe some money you can invest in January. It's a long shot to stay up. Of course it is. But it's not completely doomed yet. So go and get the right guy. And let's hope that there's a little bounce from the new manager and stuff like that.
Or do you think in terms of, let's think of the guy who's going to bring us back next year. Let's
maybe.
View this as an 18-month project.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, we've seen other clubs do that before and be successful at it.
Yeah, maybe. And if that's Lampard or whoever else, that kind of profile, then so be it.
Yeah, is it weird that Lampard's...
Well, because you think he would not take a club like that. He would look for a better project.
I have no idea, but...
No, but...
I'm Frank Lampard Jr., right?
You can't go... If you're in for the Newcastle job and then end up taking the Norway job,
I mean,
it hasn't been a good 3 days. I feel really bad, Gab, that we've left it all so late in the show to talk about the team that is leading La Liga. So please, let's show some love to Real Sociedad, who had another derby after the one against Athletic Bilbao, this time against Osasuna, and they won that. Not like the other one.
They won. I don't... Look at all the things that are supposed to fall in place, right, for somebody like Real Sociedad to win La Liga.
Yeah.
They're supposed to not play European football. Well, Real Sociedad do play European football. They're supposed to keep their players fit. Well, they've had a rash of injuries, including their best guy out there. They're supposed to have the right mix of age and of experience and whatever. No, they're the youngest team in La Liga. I thought this was tremendous. They're playing Osasuna. It's a derby.
Yeah,
Osasuna are tough defensively.
Team,
In the end, Mikel Merino scores. Doesn't celebrate because he I don't know if he came through the ranks of Osasuna or he's an Osasuna fan or whatever. Then Januzaj adds a second. There's something about this season.
Yeah.
This is one where they should have dropped the ball. They didn't. They roll on. Top of La Liga. Yeah.
Do you remember when Emmanuel said that Merino was the best player in La Liga? At the moment, I mean, I think he's pushed that one a little bit, but he came big for them.
No, but the thing about Menino's been really good for a while. But there's other players who I think, you know, maybe this season haven't been as effective because they've had injuries, they've been in and out. People like Porto, for example. So, or
even, you know, David Silva, yeah.
Or David Silva as well. Like, so there are ways that they can come back.
Mm.
Arsene Wenger is starring in a new documentary about his career, and he says that maybe he should have left Arsenal in 2007 when David Dean moved on and perhaps taken one of the many jobs on offer. Manchester United, yeah. England, Paris Saint-Germain, Real Madrid, Microsoft, Google, yeah. Facebook, US Treasury. Jules, your thoughts?
Yeah, but too bad for you then, Arsene. I don't know why you're coming up now. 10 years, 15 years later, saying like, oh, I wish, because, you know, I wish also I had managed PSG when I could 5 years ago, but I turned it down. And now here I am with Gamakuti. Lazio are threatening legal action against Amazon Prime and their miniseries on Diego Maradona. Gab, what is this all about?
This is pretty remarkable. So Amazon Prime produces this, frankly, from the one clip that they released, looks pretty low budget, but whatever. Yeah. This miniseries about Diego Maradona. And there's a scene when Napoli are playing Lazio and Maradona gives this rousing, you know, in the huddle, which, by the way, he never did. He gives this rousing thing. He's like, oh, those fascists over there are going to, they think they're going to humiliate us. Now, obviously, this is partly to do with Lazio's image and Lazio's past. Lazio come out and say, like, all right, first of all, back then, Lazio were terrible. They were up and down in second division. So this scene could have never happened because they were never in a position to humiliate Napoli. Second of all, this fascist stereotyping is completely completely silly. You have no evidence that Maradona ever said that. It wasn't a thing at the time between Napoli and Lazio. And I think, guess what? I think they're right.
Yeah,
yes, they have a nasty legacy. Yes, they have fans who are clearly of that persuasion. They have a lot of fans who really aren't of that persuasion at all. In fact, a number of people, for example, in Roma's Jewish community are Lazio supporters and high-profile ones, too. It's just such cheap stereotyping, and I just wish they get out of this. Jules, before we go, Battle of the Leagues,
semifinal. Yes.
I have a sense now. You and Ligue 1, you're going to take on K Murray and Serie A, and I, my Bundesliga team, will be taking on lovely Mark Ogden and the Premier League.
Shall we meet in the final again?
I have a sense. It's pretty much nailed on.
Yeah.
We're going to be meeting again in the final. But let's come back on Thursday this week, international break. Always our favorite time.
Yeah.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.